India unveils a sweeping new budget, but can it help the country recover from its COVID-induced economic losses? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. A $530 billion plan has been unveiled to power Asia's third-largest economy this year. Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman today announced new spending priorities on infrastructure investment and affordable housing to help alleviate pandemic-era pressures. The government now expects the economy to grow between 8 and 8.5%, a slower rate than this fiscal year's 9.2% pace. The BBC's Arunade Mukherjee explains what the reaction has been so far to this new budget.
Experts are calling it a growth-oriented budget, around $100 billion on capital expenditure. This spending, the government claimed, was nearly a 34% hike. That is certainly being welcomed, but in the next few days and weeks, I think these numbers will be analysed to understand how much of this is fresh fund infusion and how much of this will be reappropriation of the existing funds to try and boost the existing schemes.
And there are elections in some key states across the country coming up. Is some of the thinking that these spending plans will also help boost support there for the government?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the states that is going to polls in just the next 10 days is India's most populous state. So clearly, there have been some political considerations that have dictated the economics of it all as well. For instance, the farmer laws, which the government was forced to repeal. So nearly $36 billion has been announced in the form of direct payments to farmers' accounts under the minimum guaranteed price for farmers' produce. That was one of the key issues that the farmers have been fighting for. The government has also introduced incentive schemes which will encourage chemical-free and natural farming methods. They talked about the use of drones to promote crop assessment in far-flung areas and using drones to help spray insecticides, and also financing of startups specifically meant for agriculture and rural enterprises to try and boost development in this particular sector.
The rising cost of living has been a topic of conversation for people in countries all over the world. The government in India, though, this week also warned about growing risks from global inflation. How big of an issue is that for policymakers in the country, do you think?
The government has been in a tight fiscal position to try and figure out whether they continue to lower rates or leave them static to try and also battle inflation. But they're hoping that as the Omicron variant slowly fades away in the next few weeks, they're hoping that the Indian economy will be back on track and therefore economic policies will be tailored in such a way that they can help sort of offset inflationary concerns as well.
Cryptocurrencies and the environment also featured heavily in this budget too, didn't it?
That's right. And that's something that India has seen a massive rise in. And to boost digital payments, we heard the first major official announcement from the government on that aspect. The digital rupee is likely to be introduced, and it should come in between 2022 this year and 2023. They didn't specify the exact terms and conditions of what it will be like, but essentially the digital rupee will be a legal tender in digital form. The Indian government said that it would be a more effective and also cost-effective mode that they're looking to experiment with. Also, amidst the deliberation on cryptocurrency laws, the government also introduced 30% taxes, interestingly, on any income that will be generated by virtual assets. But the other global conversation, Victoria, has been about climate change, and in keeping with the big ambitious targets and promises that Prime Minister Modi made recently, the government also announced in that budget incentives worth nearly $2.6 billion towards solar power. Another interesting aspect that India has been struggling with is creating supportive infrastructure for electric vehicles, which has still been at a nascent stage. So what the Indian government is doing, in keeping with India's shrinking urban space, they feel that it might be easier to provide options like battery swapping rather than spending on and erecting charging infrastructure in crowded cities of the country. So battery swapping policies is also something that could see light of day in the coming months.
The BBC's Arunade Mukherjee for us in Delhi. Thanks for breaking this down.
Thank you very much.
Well, bond prices dropped on the heels of that announcement from the Indian government this morning. The country's benchmark share index also gave up early gains, but it did close up 1.4%. Checking some other numbers now. Stock markets across Europe are on the rise. Benchmarks here in London and in Paris, Frankfurt and Madrid are up in the 0.7% to 1% range. Well, across Myanmar today, people are taking part in a silent strike to protest a military coup that took place exactly a year ago. It's caused the country's economy to contract by nearly a fifth, according to the World Bank. Photos posted on social media today appear to show empty streets and marketplaces. The BBC's Jonathan Head has more from the country's border with Thailand.
Unable to protest openly since last year's brutal suppression by the security forces, Myanmar citizens marked the anniversary of the coup by staying at home. The streets of the largest cities were deserted for most of the day, despite threats by the military government against businesses which supported the silent strike. There was a small pro-military march in Yangon and a larger one in the capital Naypyidaw. A year after the coup, diplomatic initiatives to solve the crisis have made no progress. Myanmar's neighbours are divided over how much pressure to put on the military to curb its use of violence.
That's Jonathan Head reporting there. So I have this bad habit of checking my emails right up until the moment I turn out the lights at night. Working across time differences doesn't help much, but just the ability to stay connected at all hours of the day has permanently blurred the lines between work and home. Today, though, Belgium joins a growing list of countries enacting legal protections for 65,000 civil servants for the right to disconnect. The BBC's Jessica Parker has more on that from Brussels.
The sound of nutmeg being grated as Delphine Pirot prepares hachis parmentier, a sort of shepherd's pie. Off work for the evening, she's making dinner for her friends in her apartment. Onions are being chopped, a few beers opened. The 36-year-old civil servant welcomes ways to help people switch off.
Especially for young people, it's not always clear when they have to be available or not. Because when you begin a new job, you want to be perfect, you know. And you think, if I don't answer that email at 10 o'clock at night, maybe my boss will not like it. So now I think it's going to be a cultural change.
The new rules mean bosses can't get in touch outside normal hours, although there are exceptions. People also shouldn't be disadvantaged by not answering calls and emails. The idea, better well-being, less stress. So what do people in Brussels think?
It's a good idea as people move more and more towards digital work especially.
You work your 8 hours and then you go home.
I think it's part of the job. To be there when it's necessary.
Opposition from the Liberals or...
Oh, not really.
In a rather grand government building in Brussels city centre, I meet the minister in charge of the law change, Petra de Sutter.
And this is the real disease of today.
She says there are plans to expand it to the private sector, but critics question the need for further regulation.
What would you say to people who suggest this is actually a bad idea, inefficient maybe?
It is a misconception to think that you really should work 24/7 because we see that a lot of people cannot cope with that and they are falling out.
Back at Delphine's, dinner is in the oven. The time is on. Similar laws have been introduced in France, Italy and Spain. It's all about time and how we use it.
That's the BBC's Jessica Parker reporting from Brussels there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.